Chapter 11. The True Messenger of Divine Service. Late one afternoon we were returning with Electra from a drive along the shore of the Mediterranean, and had just entered the door of her home when a sealed letter dropped at Rex's feet. He picked it up and, opening it, read, "My beloved children, leave tomorrow morning for India. All is in readiness, and we are happy to welcome you. Saint Germain." Our host of the yacht had not been with us during our sightseeing trip in Alexandria, but when we arrived at the pier he greeted us joyously with the news that we had been assured of a calm, delightful voyage. We again passed through the Red Sea as we sped swiftly on our way to one of the greatest centers of spiritual light and power on this planet. Leto continued her instruction during the entire trip at Saint Germain's request, that Bob and Rex might reach the point where they could come and go from the physical body, consciously and at will. By the fifth day of our journey, they had become quite proficient, and, like most young people, wanted to experiment often in using their newly evolved powers. This Leto would not permit. "There must be a very great sense of spiritual honor and integrity," she explained, "in regard to the use of these mighty powers of the I Am Presence. For the great law of being does not permit them to be brought into our outer use except where it is for the accomplishment of permanent good. We must be aware at all times that whenever we use the life, substance, and power of this universe for the mere gratification or pleasure of the senses, only misery and destruction can be the result. The mighty I Am Presence works ceaselessly to build, release, express, and constantly expand perfection in all its creative activity, and permanently maintain love, peace, and constant service to all. If the sensations of the body and the outer activity of the mind are permitted to run riot and interfere with the divine life plan of the individual, disaster and failure are the result. The true student of light never, never uses his powers for the amusement and gratification of the senses, for exploitation of anyone's personality, nor to make money by producing phenomena. The ascended master's way of life is to give, give, give. First, love and adoration to his own mighty I Am Presence, and then expand love and perfection by pouring it out to everybody and everything. To send out divine love without limit all the time is the whole of the law applied. If mankind could only understand this, the individual would realize that he must pour out this flame of divine love before the perfection which he desires can flow into his world and release things into his use. Divine love is a feeling, an actual ray of light, which flows out from the flame within the heart. It can be sent forth so powerfully that this ray of light substance is both visible and tangible. It is the most invincible power of the universe. Use it, beloved ones, without limit, and nothing is impossible to you." By temperament and training, Leto was a calm, sweet, marvelously poised teacher, but we were amazed at the power she could release when she wished to impress a certain understanding of the law upon our consciousness. She was not accustomed to the boyish pranks of Bob and Rex, but she soon made it unmistakably plain to us all that no boyish pranks played any part in the operation of these great cosmic laws. "The cosmic law acts," she continued, "wherever the thoughts and feelings direct and qualify the energy, and it is no respecter of persons, places, conditions, things, motives, ignorance, nor knowledge, any more than is a current of electricity running through a motor or dynamo. If you turn on the power, it acts according to the direction given it." This is a point that many students do not seem to comprehend or do not wish to take the responsibility for, but the truth of the law is the only thing with which we are concerned. Our work is to put the exact truth of the law before humanity. If they refuse to understand and obey it, then their suffering must increase until the human side breaks its shell of obstinacy and selfishness and lets the mighty presence of the I Am control all, according to the perfection of life. Therefore, never joke in thought, feeling, or the spoken word about the powers of the Godhead, for to do so without exception draws heartbreaking experiences into your world. Therefore, govern your outer moods with an inflexible will whenever you use the powers of the mighty I Am Presence. In order to manifest the greater expressions of the I Am Presence, the individual must become aware of and feel that presence within himself, and know that the very life energy which beats his heart and breathes through his lungs is constantly flowing into his physical body from his electronic body. His electronic body is projected into space from the very heart center of the cosmic life of the universe, which you have heard us refer to as the great central sun. This pure life energy flowing ceaselessly into the mind and body of the individual is the triune activity of the Supreme, acting everywhere throughout infinity. It is intelligence, substance, and energy, the one universal light out of which comes all manifestation. It is subject at all times to the conscious direction and use of the individual with self-conscious, individualized free will. The minerals, plants, and animals do not have the control of this activity, for only the flame of the Godhead is endowed with self-directing free will. The more attention one gives the mighty I Am Presence, the more he will learn of the vast realms of wisdom that stretch before him. The more he realizes the immense responsibility and limitless opportunity that are his, the more should he ask the mighty I Am Presence within his own heart to teach him all things. If one wants wisdom, he must turn his attention to the only source of wisdom, the mighty I Am Presence. Only by acknowledging the I Am can the first impulse be given which releases its wisdom into the outer use of the individual. It is by acknowledgement that the first wave flows forth to release it into the physical activity. Otherwise, it remains forever quiescent within the consciousness of the I Am. The release of it can only come at the command of the self-directing will of the flame of God. Learn to call forth these God attributes and activities from the very heart of the universe, and then use them in love to bless all mankind. If you will do this, there is no height you cannot attain, and no gift you can ask of life that life will not release to you, when you understand what part of you says, I am, and you are willing to use all to bless life everywhere with love. Use the understanding of the I Am Presence that you now have, and persist in loving and blessing life everywhere, and you will open wide the floodgates to freedom, the realms and activities of the limitless, the natural world and life of the ascended masters. Use the wisdom you now have, and more will come as surely as your heart beats and your mind thinks. At dinner on the evening of the seventh day of the voyage, our host announced that we were to reach Bombay late the next evening, but we were to remain aboard until the following morning. Bombay is one of the most beautiful harbors in the world, and as our yacht came alongside the pier, we were greeted by the Indian master, Shananda, to whom we were presented by our host. We drove to the railroad station, where we were conducted to a private car, every convenience being provided for us until we reached our destination. It was here only that the outline of our stay in India was given. First, we were to go to Calcutta and remain there 2 days while certain work would be given. The trip to Calcutta was delightful, and although the days were very warm outside, we were not aware of it in the train. We passed many places of great scenic beauty, and shortly after leaving Bombay, we missed Bob. We started a search for him, and as we entered his compartment, realized he had left his body. Lita warned us immediately. "Do not touch his body," she said, "for he has gone with the Master Shananda." For a few moments Nada had a hard struggle to command herself and keep at peace, for this was the first time Bob had gone forth from his body without previous preparation. However, she soon controlled her feelings and became at peace. In about 2 hours, Bob came walking into the observation car in which we had all gathered. He was as serene as could be, but the rest of us immediately asked concerning his experiences, and of course wanted to know where he had been. We could get him to reveal nothing, and finally he said, "Each of us is to keep his experience strictly within his own consciousness until the end of our destination, and then we are to compare notes." That afternoon, Nod and Pearl were gone about 2 hours. The next morning, Rex and I left our bodies. Each of us had experienced practically the same things, for we were being trained in accurate observation. Shri Singh, the brother who had taken Shananda's place, was delighted in every way, but very silent. Yet when he did talk, it was always for some very definite purpose. The day we arrived in Calcutta, Shananda reappeared to us, and when we had become seated at dinner, with his magic radiant smile remarked, "I congratulate each of you on the fearless way in which you are able to leave your bodies and go forth strong and free. It means great enlightenment for all, as well as the entering into a tremendous field of service. Lito, my sister, you are a most efficient instructor, and your work with these students is remarkably well done. It is only in this freedom, my friends, that you are permitted to know, feel, and experience the full use of the cosmic rays. You are now in a position to receive the full benefit of your training with us." Electra and our host of the yacht were silent, but very careful observers of all that had taken place, and were no doubt being trained in the same way. We felt keenly the intensity and power of the instruction, for everything we did had a definite objective and purpose. We arrived in Calcutta and drove rapidly for about half an hour, finally coming to a stop in front of a beautiful building situated upon a prominence in which was evidently the best residential section of the city. Shananda led the way into the building, which he told us was secretly owned and maintained by the Great White Brotherhood. The interior was a perfect dream of beauty, typical of many of the marvels in India. It breathed the wisdom, light, and purity of ages of perfection. We went immediately to the council chamber on the second floor, where we found the Brotherhood already assembled. We noticed seats had been left vacant at the head of the table of honor. Shananda led the way to these seats and took the head himself. It was only then we learned that he was the head of the Indian Council. As soon as all had assembled, the business part of the meeting was called, and some of the ascended masters were asked to give their protection to certain Englishmen in India, who were sincere in their desire to bring about greater good. They also arranged for protection to be given a group of lesser brothers, whose desire to do right was sincere, and who were giving good service, but who did not always use the greatest discrimination in the outer activity, because their zeal exceeded their wisdom. After the meeting, we were presented to all the members and spent a delightful social hour. We motored back to our private car and found it had been run out on a spur of track into surroundings that looked like a flower garden, with a beautiful fountain playing just outside the windows where we dined. We commented on the ability of Shananda to have the beautiful always expressed to us, and with one of his smiles that ever gave one the sense of sunshine, he replied, "It is really much easier to express the beautiful, because it is natural, and the true expression of the mighty I Am presence within everyone. When anyone truly accepts this glorious presence, and feels it as the Godhead doing all things through and for him, the rest of his activity must conform to its marvelous beauty and perfection. The full acceptance of the mighty I Am presence by the individual always commands and governs all outer experience harmoniously. It is only when one truly and fully accepts this glorious God presence within himself that he becomes a true messenger for divine service. Then, as the perfection of the mighty I Am presence begins to be released in a greater degree through the outer activity, all the courage and assurance comes through, for at last the personal self sees and feels the mighty inner presence, knowing its full power, majesty, and mastery. The next day, we were taken to one of the ancient temples, in whose subterranean chambers is going on a work undreamed of by the outer world. That night at dinner, Shinanda told us we were to leave for Darjeeling early in the morning, and that we were to eat breakfast en route. The scenery was gorgeous, and the sensation of watching the giant, snow-capped mountains come closer and closer as we gradually climbed in altitude was fascinating, but we soon began to feel the change, for we had risen more than 7,000 feet. We arrived at the top of our climb just in time to see a glorious sunset in a very clear atmosphere. In the distance, we could see Mount Everest and the other famous peaks of that glorious range. The majesty, towering presence of these mountains and the mystery of the ages that shrouded their past made us all feel a deeper longing than ever to reach to the inmost heart of the great eternal wisdom, to feel ourselves a part of it, and to be able to pour forth its blessings to all mankind, that they might be happy also. "I want you to stay here tonight," said Shinanda, "and see the sunrise from this particular spot, as it will be many years before we shall see it again in cooperation with a certain cosmic activity that is taking place at this time. It is the first time in 70 years that these two activities occur simultaneously." At 3 o'clock, we arose and mounted our little ponies, which took us still higher up the mountain to a point where we could see the sunrise to best advantage. We reached this place just as its radiance began to grow brighter. In a few seconds, great rays of light of every conceivable color began to shoot into the sky and continued for fully 10 minutes. It was as if light itself rejoiced in the mighty presence of life. Then, as the great golden disk came into view, a quivering, sparkling radiance pierced our flesh and penetrated into the very centers of our bodies. Never before had we experienced any such sensation from sunlight. The vivifying effect lasted for hours, and the glorious feeling, the beauty of the scene left with us, still floods over me as I recall the experience. One knows, after such an occurrence, that the mighty master intelligence of the universe is still at the helm and guides the destinies of our earth and humanity, notwithstanding all outer appearances of chaos to the contrary. "You have felt within your body," said Shinanda, "a slight action of the mighty cosmic rays that have been directed to earth at the present time by great cosmic masters who are giving transcendent assistance in this cycle to humanity in its outer struggle. Their outpouring is a radiance of love, courage, and strength to the race that sustains the individual during this period of change, and so illumines his inner bodies that it enables the mighty I Am presence to release more of its perfection into and through the outer self. Those of you who are to receive training in the use of these rays will be enabled to focus great streams of light essence and consciously direct them, pouring forth blessings to mankind through great currents of healing power and harmonizing streams of love. Few are ready to be taught how to control and use these mighty rays, but all for whom it is possible are being prepared now. These great streams of condensed light and pure substance can be drawn qualified and sent forth again to produce a definite result, as easily as a searchlight reveals the scenes it passes over. Come now, we must return and go to the home of the chief of the Council of Darjeeling. We went back to our ponies, which took us to Darjeeling, and thence we were driven by auto to a beautiful home built upon one of the lovely hills surrounding the city. The grounds were filled with stately trees, and the view over the country that lay below us was one of the most beautiful on earth. We were ushered in and presented to the head of this branch of the Great White Brotherhood. He was a tall, handsome man, with piercing dark eyes that seemed to look clear through one, but when there was no intense feeling being expressed, they were as soft as those of a fawn. To our surprise, he did not wear a turban, but his soft, beautiful, dark brown hair waved slightly and fell to his shoulders. He was very gracious and gave us a most loving welcome. A glorious peace clothed him and his surroundings, filling the entire place with his wonderful radiance. He inquired about our trip, asked if we had enjoyed the sunrise from the mountain, and invited us to dine with him that evening. He talked very freely and told us many wonderful things about India. He repeated for our enjoyment many legends about the Himalayan mountains, and one in particular about the holy caves within the heart of this mighty range. His discourse was fascinating and instructive beyond words. Some of these caves, he said, you shall see while you are in India, for I know you are interested in the ancient records of mankind, and in one of them the most ancient records upon this earth are still held in safekeeping. These records are not brought forth into the use of the outer world at the present time because of the lack of spiritual growth and understanding of the people. The race has a restlessness and critical feeling that is a very destructive activity, and these feelings find vent through fanatics of various kinds, whose understanding of life and this magnificent universe is so narrow and childish that they seek to destroy whatever does not agree with their own petty notions of what has been or ought to be the infinite plan of creation. It is this misguided, selfish ignorance in mankind that has been responsible for all inharmony down the ages, for the destruction of records that would throw light upon humanity's many problems. It was this unbridled, vicious feeling that destroyed the wonderful library at Alexandria and the marvelous records of the Incan civilization. Yet notwithstanding these former losses, the ascended masters of the Great White Brotherhood have always foreseen such destructive impulses, and have withdrawn all important records of every civilization and preserved them, then left the less important to be destroyed by the vicious impulse of the Vandals. One day, when humanity is prepared for it, and it is positively safe for these records to be given to the outer world, there will appear in a central location a marvelous library, not made by hands, where these records will be available, and those in the outer world who have received the necessary credentials may see them. When mankind becomes enlightened enough to cease generating the vicious destruction it has been expressing up to the present time, this will be done. Mankind, through its irritated destructive feeling and powerful thought force, has peopled the visible and invisible with thought forms of intense passion, hatred, fear, and destruction. These fasten themselves upon human beings that generated them, and also upon others who, because they have a similar feeling, open themselves to this malignant force. Humanity has almost no understanding of what happens when the personal self sends out a feeling of irritation, anger, hate, envy, jealousy, criticism, or condemnation. The feeling side of human nature is the feminine activity of consciousness within every individual. The thought is the masculine activity of the mind. A thought never becomes dynamic in the outer life until it passes through the feeling body. The feeling condenses upon the thought pattern, the atomic substance of the outer activity of life. In thus passing through the feeling body, the thought becomes clothed, and thereafter exists as a separate living thing outside of the individual's mind. There have been platitudes by the million, written and preached about divine love being the law of life. But who knows how to generate the feeling of divine love consciously and at will to a limitless degree, and put it in the place of irritation, hate, etc., as a wave of actual force and substance in one's own emotional body? Such a thing is not only possible, but must be done, if human beings are to stop suffering and express perfection. The personality cannot be permanently harmonious, except it be kept filled with divine love, consciously generated. If mental statements of the law of life and prayers were the way to perfection, happiness, and freedom, the number of sermons preached on this earth should have perfected and illumined 100 planets long before this. If prayers, which by the way are generally a series of I wants or O Lord give us, were the way to freedom from limitation, the prayers that have been uttered in this world should have perfected 12 humanities. I do not say that prayers have not brought good, they have. But prayer should be a quieting of the intellect and a stilling of the feelings, that the personality might feel the outpouring of the mighty I Am Presence and receive the response from within. Prayer should be an outpouring of love and gratitude to the Presence for the limitless opportunities and good contained within life. The outer world likes to flatter its vanity by the feeling that it has the ability to accomplish great things. But so far as the control and perfection of the feelings are concerned, the outer world is still in a savage state. Human beings sting others as well as themselves through vicious feelings just as surely as does the scorpion. The predominant feeling in our modern world is terrifically vicious when personalities are opposing and criticizing those who disagree with them. So-called civilized people commit murder every day of the week through sending out angry and irritated feelings that kill the higher impulses in others. It is the feeling of the race that needs to be redeemed and saved from its own self-generated destruction. Until the individual understands the need of self-control in regard to his feelings in the waking consciousness, it is impossible to maintain any permanent forward movement of a constructive nature. All accomplishment that is not attained through the feeling of divine love is but temporary, for divine love alone is the way to permanent perfection. It is pitiful to see how, for centuries, the human race has occupied its time and used its energy to build up things through thought and at the same time tear its creation to pieces by inharmonious feelings. It is childish and is a stubborn refusal to fulfill the eternal plan of perfection. The hour is at hand when the great cosmic law which governs this system of worlds is releasing a tremendous expansion of the light of the mighty I Am Presence throughout our group of planets, and whatever cannot accept the power of that light is consumed thereby. So mankind need no longer fool itself with the idea that it can continue to generate destructive feelings and survive. The end of the former dispensation has come, and all things are made new. Let him who runs read, that he may learn the way of light while there is yet time. There is no evil anywhere on this earth or any other except that which human beings have generated themselves sometime, somewhere. Most of it has been done through ignorance, but a great deal has been done willfully by those who ought to know better and who are fully aware of their wrongdoing. The individual who uses his intellect to foster destructive activities in the new cycle into which we have recently entered must face his own destruction, or its recoil is inevitable. It will be swift and definite, for the present activity is expressing such speed that the recoil is many times only a matter of hours, weeks, or months at most, where heretofore it has been a matter of years. The ascended masters work ceaselessly to have humanity understand and see this, and the work of our messengers is to get this truth into the consciousness of mankind as clearly as possible. It is now nearly dinner time. Attendants will show you to your quarters. After refreshing yourselves, return here and we shall dine. Later, dinner was announced by beautiful chimes. Our host offered his arm to Nada and led the way into a magnificent banquet hall, which must have seated fully 500 people. "This is really our council chamber," he explained. "Later this evening, all the members of the Darjeeling Council will assemble here." We enjoyed a most delicious dinner while our host entertained us with an endless fund of information. As we were leaving, he asked to be excused as he had work to do before the council met. "Our host," said Shinanda, in whose care he had left us, "is a brother of great wisdom and power, but the very embodiment of gentleness and kindness." At 9 o'clock he returned, and offering his arm to Leto, led the way into the council chamber, where 200 members of the Great White Brotherhood had already assembled. He took his place at the head of the main table, and seated half of our group on his right and the other half on his left. He called the meeting to order, and their work began. We were thrilled again and again as we listened to the solution of many important world problems, especially some of those which were holding the attention of Europe at the moment. He then assigned certain duties to many of the brothers. The meeting adjourned, and we were presented individually to many of the members. We had been enjoying the social activities for some few moments when I noticed that Rex was laboring under the strain of some intense excitement. He watched one of the members closely for some time, and then went quickly and boldly up to our host. He informed him there was a spy in the room, and pointed out the individual. For an instant, it seemed as if the power within the chief would crush him, but Rex was clothed in a divine dignity that never flinched. "That is a grave charge," said the chief. "It will require proof." At that moment, the man in question came up to Pearl and realized instantly that he was being watched. He reached into the folds of his robe, drew something forth, and raised it to his mouth. Pearl seized it as quick as a flash, and Bob, who stood near, with one leap, pinned the man's hands behind him in a grasp of steel. "Search him," said Pearl, as our host stepped forward, and Rex, without waiting for authority from anyone, went through the spy's clothing like lightning. He found all the proof they needed of his activities as a spy. As the chief came forward and saw the name on the papers Rex handed him, he was surprised indeed, for the spy, who was an educated Afghan, had been sent into India by a government that breeds only destruction, and had ferreted his way into the outer ranks of this council to obtain information which he had been using against them. At a signal, one of the brothers stepped forward and led the spy from the room. "Brother Rex," said our host with a gracious smile, "you have served the cause of light well, and rendered our brotherhood a blessing of tremendous import. There has been a leak in some of our activities recently. Tell me, how did you become aware of his operations? He has been deceiving us very cleverly." "My attention," replied Rex, "was drawn to him by the inner power of my I Am presence, and as I watched his eyes, I knew he was practicing some kind of deception. It all happened so quickly I hardly knew in the outer activity of my mind what was occurring. If it had not been for Pearl, my twin ray, we would have been too late." "Outwardly, you three may not have known what it was all about, But the mighty presence of the I Am has acted with unerring decision. You see, my beloved ones, how the twin rays can act with the speed of lightning in perfect unison when the great inner presence is allowed to have full control. My sister and brother, he continued, as he extended his left hand to Pearl and his right one to Rex, you will be able to do splendid work for the mighty I Am presence, the great white brotherhood, and humanity, and I bless you for that service. What is to be done with the spy? Asked Pearl. The man knows what he must do, replied the chief. Let us forget it ever happened. We shall always remember your service to the brotherhood. By this time most of the guests had left, so we bowed our host goodbye, for we were leaving Darjeeling in the morning. We did not stop again at Calcutta, but went directly through to Benares, the sacred city of the Hindus, and one of the oldest cities in India. As our private coach drew into the railway station, we became keenly aware of a sincere devotion in the very atmosphere of the place. Imagine our joy when almost the very first person we saw was our beloved friend Alexander Gaylord, who had arrived in Benares only a few hours before. Rex, Bob, and I made a dash for him as soon as the train stopped. When his friend, the owner of the yacht, came up to greet him, they looked into each other's eyes with a deep love and understanding born of centuries of association. As Leto, Gaylord's twin ray, approached, he extended his arms and held her close to his heart. Shananda then presented Electra. We are to be guests this evening of one of the oldest councils in India, he said. It is to be purely a spiritual feast, devoted entirely to the guests. All members of the order are to wear their seamless robes. I shall return for you at 6 o'clock. We returned to our compartment and prepared for the evening banquet. When Shananda returned, he was accompanied by his sister Nadja, a beautiful young girl, or at least so she appeared, to whom we were presented. We were driven to a beautiful building on an elevation overlooking the city. As we approached the entrance, involuntarily we expressed our joy at the beauty and exquisite surroundings of the scene we gazed upon. As we passed through the entrance, we entered a rotunda of pink marble, veined with soft green, in which there were 7 white marble pillars. The effect was warm, delicate, and very beautiful. Nadja led the way to the dressing rooms where we donned our seamless robes, and then conducted us toward a great arched doorway that opened at our approach, admitting us into a large, magnificent council chamber made entirely of white marble and elaborately decorated in gold. There were no lighting fixtures in the place, yet it was filled by a soft white light that was wonderful. This great hall seated fully 500 people, some 200 having already arrived. We are to be honored tonight by 3 divine guests, announced Shananda as he presented us to those assembled, and we took our seats. Let us meditate upon the great principle of life, the mighty I Am presence, until music shall signal the close of our meditation. Presently, the soft tones of great bells stole gently upon the air, and as we raised our heads and I looked toward the head of the table, where the 3 vacant chairs had been, we could scarcely repress our explanation of joy and surprise as we saw our beloved Saint Germain at the head of the table, on his left Nada Rayburn, and on his right Daniel. Everyone in the room rose in honor of these blessed beings as the guests of honor. Our impulse was to rush to them in greeting, so great was our joy, but something in each of us controlled all outer activity as we bowed low in quiet dignity and loving respect. I present to you our beloved brother of light, Saint Germain, said Shananda, addressing those assembled, and his 2 guests, Nada and Daniel Rayburn, who raised their bodies as his students in America. Our sister raised her body after what to the outer world seemed death. Our brother Daniel accomplished his victory without coming to that point. At the close of this explanation, the light within and about Shananda blazed forth in a dazzling radiance. As he continued, our blessed brother and honored guest, Saint Germain, will have full charge of the evening and will conduct the rest of the work. Saint Germain, in his usual loving dignity, bowed in acknowledgment of the greeting and replied, "We shall have a banquet tonight served from the cosmic kitchen. Many of you have heard of these activities, but have not seen nor experienced the actual manifestation. In the great cosmic treasure house surrounding you is an omnipresent substance from which is produced everything the heart desires." The beautiful banquet tables had jade tops, so no linen was supplied to cover their magnificence. Saint Germain asked all to bow their heads in loving acceptance of the great abundance and outpouring from the mighty I Am Presence. As he finished his acknowledgement to the source of all life, the service for the meal began to appear. The plates, cups, and saucers were made of pink china, decorated with delicate moss roses. The silver knives, forks, and spoons had carved jade handles and tumblers of carved jade. Filled with a golden, sparkling nectar, appeared at the right hand of each guest. Then followed a tiny loaf of bread about 2 by 2 by 4 inches, appearing upon each plate. The food for each person came individually, as if it had been ordered separately, for everyone received that which he most desired until all were served abundantly and were satisfied. Next came many kinds of luscious fruit in great golden containers, and for dessert, a kind of fruit whip appeared in crystal dishes. The entire banquet was served without the clatter of a single dish, and at the close Saint Germain arose and addressed the guests. "The great ascended masters," he began, "have wanted you to see, know, and partake of food which is produced direct from the omnipresent cosmic substance. This substance is what has been explained to you as the pure electronic substance which fills infinity, and out of which all forms are created and all manifestation produced. This limitless substance about you everywhere is yours to manipulate, to mold into form without any limit whatsoever, when you hold close enough and sincerely enough, without interruption, to the mighty I Am Presence in you. This glorious angelic being and power, which is the real you, who is constantly pouring its energy into your physical brain and body, is God individualized at your point in the universe to mold this cosmic substance into whatever form you decree. To the human beings who do not or will not recognize the mighty I Am Presence, the use, joy, and freedom of this great bounty by direct precipitation remains unused, because their feeling of fear, doubt, hate, anger, selfishness, or lust builds an impassable wall around them, shutting out the power and perfection of the light which would otherwise come through. The great, all-wise creator of perfect form everywhere throughout space builds those forms according to the pattern of perfection, which is another name for the law of divine love. This always means the orderly, harmonious way of attraction. The feeling of doubt, fear, etc., is a rate of vibration which shatters form and scatters substance. Hence is diametrically opposed to love, harmony, and order. To the individual who acknowledges the mighty I Am Presence, takes a determined stand with it, and continually maintains a feeling of divine love in the personality, to him all that you have seen done tonight is possible of accomplishment. Right now in this lifetime. This banquet has been given for your encouragement, enlightenment, and strength. The power of precipitation used here tonight is within every individual. I assure you it is no myth. Turn to your own mighty master within. This will enable you to acknowledge the I Am. Continually turn to it, that its mighty power may be released and the ascended master wisdom come forth, directing your every activity. Break down the self-created barriers that have bound you, and see what an avalanche of good the mighty I Am Presence stands always ready to pour out into your use at your conscious command, when you charge your feelings with divine love and maintain order in the temple, your mind and body. Our good brother Daniel Rayborn has something which he wishes to tell you. As Rayborn arose, we felt a thrill pass through the whole room, and for more than 30 minutes he poured forth marvelous wisdom with a force that seemed to burn the very words into the consciousness of everyone. He spoke with a conviction that could only come from one who had more than human power. Shananda said a few words in praise and gratitude to our wonderful guests, asking them to be with us again soon. Saint Germain then arose and continued, "Most gracious host and friends," he began, "I wish to present the entire service used at this banquet to your council for future use. Observe." Instantly all the used service began reappearing on the tables as clean and fresh as if it had never been used. In the midst of this joyous experience, a beautiful vase of carved jade filled with wonderful pink roses appeared on each table.